Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Inkwazi Unfiltered. Today, I have with me in the studio somebody who is totally passionate about Zambian music, totally passionate about his songwriting, very passionate about his artistic presence on the stage. Somebody who I would say has brought Kalindula back to our lives, also with a fusion from other music. I'd like to welcome to the studio James Sakala.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming through.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
And this looking feels like home for me, you know.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. And looking dapper as usual.
Thank you. As a Ngoni man, you know?
Absolutely. Pride. And I should have said a very, very proud man.
Yeah,
exactly. And we've just had a little chat about, you know, having seen you recently and
yes.
A little bit about how you performed.
And it had to be a Chilanga Mulilo. It's something that's cultural,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm passionate about my culture.
I know.
And also my country as a whole, you know?
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. So I really want to start this conversation with your early years. Like, I'd want to know, everybody else out there wants to know where you were born and what your childhood looked like.
Okay. If I share about where I was born, hopefully I don't get deported. Yeah.
Because
they say where you are born is your country.
And that's meant to be the passport you're meant to have.
Exactly. You know, but I was born in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
In 1983. Did I say 93? 83. Yeah. But I grew up in Zambia.
Yes.
In Mukushi, Central Province.
Yes, in Mukushi.
Yes. So I remember we moved to Zambia. I'm saying moved back to Zambia because my parents are Zambians.
Mm-hmm.
They were just working in Zimbabwe.
Okay.
So we moved back to Zambia in 1986 and settled in Mukushi. So that's where I did my first grades and also secondary.
And herding?
First of all, I've never been to college. I am just, you know, a secondary graduate.
Okay.
Yeah. And then after that, I became a farmer.
Okay.
Yeah, because I grew up on a farm. So all these things that are farm related, that's what I am.
Were your parents farmers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. My grandfather was a farmer. So I grew up on my grandfather's farm.
And then the whole family was farming?
Yeah, everyone. My father's siblings, everyone are farmers. Okay. They've got farms, their own farms. My grandfather died in 2012,
mm-hmm.
And my grandmother the following year. But we all just grew up knowing farm life, and that's who we are.
Farm life as in herding,
yes.
As in selling, as
selling,
in
yes.
Crops as well.
Crops, yes, yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. Some of us should come to you then.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can farm anymore. Because I've been away from that farm life for over 20 years now.
Okay.
Actually, 25 years.
Your brothers and sisters also?
Yes. So there's a complication somewhere. My sister is in the corporate world. Then my brothers, two of my brothers are in Europe. And my other sister is a chef in America.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's diverse.
Yeah, exactly.
Has anyone got any ambitions to go back to that life?
To the farm life?
Yes.
I don't think so. I do.
Mm.
You know, I've bought a farm.
In Mukushi?
Yeah, in Mukushi.
Yeah.
I've bought a farm in Mukushi. I'm thinking maybe one day I'll retire and then go back and, you know, continue with my farm life. Maybe. Yeah. Mm. But I've started some activities there. There's some cattle. There's some goats.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And this past rain season, I didn't do any fields. So, yeah.
Because you also have to check on them, right? You
can't exactly, just exactly.
Check on them.
You know, yeah. So that's the problem because you are busy this side.
Exactly.
And, you know, balancing between this life that I have and the farm life is very difficult. Because, you know, farming is very, I would say it's very selfish.
It's very like personal.
It needs you to pay attention, like you can't have divided attention.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, you need to be there. You need to make sure that your workers are properly taken care of.
But you also have to lead by example.
Exactly,
as a farmer.
Exactly.
This is not
you
a
have
remote
to wake
control.
Up at 04 yes. And go in the fields.
It's not a remote control situation.
No, you can't.
And no cell phones.
No, no, put fertilizer. They will sell the fertilizer.
If someone sends you a picture, you're not really sure it's the
exactly
picture.
Like, did you take this picture from the neighbors and, you know, trying to make me feel good, you know? So it's like how people in the diaspora send money to people here
to build
for them,
right.
You know?
And
I'll
then
be taking
get
pictures
here.
Of the neighbor, you know?
The
house is finished. Then I'll stop picking your calls.
It's at roof level. They get here and there's nothing.
A lot of people have cried like that. Yeah. So if you want to start farming, you have to be on the ground.
Yeah. No, I definitely believe that. Mm. No, cool.
Literally on the ground.
No. So growing up there, was it just fine, farming, school life?
Yeah.
But did you at any point have an inkling that you were... and had artistic vibes or were really passionate about Zambian music?
I'm trying to find it maybe from my first grades in school, like grade one, grade two, no. What I remember is that my grandfather had those vinyl players?
Yes.
Yes. And he used to play a lot of Bob Marley, Oliver Mtukudzi, John Chibadura, Alik Macheso, you know, I don't know if you know those musicians.
Some, yes.
Yeah, like Alik Macheso from Zimbabwe, John Chibadura from Zimbabwe. He was a big artist, you know. And I remember that time I was very young, his songs were playing everywhere. Peter Tosh, because he loved African music and reggae. So he used to play a lot of that type of music. And those are the songs I remember.
Mm.
So when we, obviously, at a later stage, he bought some Zambian records, those that he could find. The likes of Piket Shala,
yes,
Pongozi, Ali Kinkata. That's how I started knowing the Zambian music.
So
and I fell in love with it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but then I was very young. Yeah. At that time, I didn't know what I wanted to do.
What language are you speaking in the house then?
Ndebele.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and my grandfather, because he was from the east, he used to speak a lot of Chewa with my grandmother. But we grew up speaking Ndebele,
nice,
and not any other language. Okay. And then at a later stage, we started learning Bemba.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you're now in this house. Dad's playing music.
Yeah.
Is he singing to it or just?
No, no, no.
Just,
no. He's just enjoying music. He just loved music. I never saw him sing. Any day, I never saw him sing, but he's just someone that really loved music. And so even my love for music, I don't know exactly where it comes from. I tried to ask my mother. My mother told me, because my mother is from Botswana.
Yes.
So my mother told me one of his brothers, who's actually late, used to play guitar.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so he used to play guitar. And I never met him because obviously he died when I was very young. Yeah. So maybe that's where it comes from. Right. I don't know. Yeah.
So you're now listening to this, picking it up, picking up the Zambian songs.
Yes.
Beginning to feel it. And then doing what with that?
Well, I'm still young, so nothing. Just loving the music and dancing to the music. And I remember this one time I was listening to Kanda Bongo Man.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle says, one of my dad's young brothers, he says... Don't end up being a musician one day. You know, like he just says that in passing. You know, like, don't end up being a musician one day. And then everyone laughs about it because I was dancing to Kanda Bongo Man. Isambeyo, yende mayuma. You know, and well, it happens after some years. You know, they support me at the end of the day.
Yeah.
They support me. There was a bit of resistance though.
At which point did you realize, I want to go this way?
Okay, so 2002, I am done writing my exams and we are in Mkushi. There's nothing to do. You know, it's easy to just, you know, pick up a wrong lifestyle.
Definitely.
You know, because at that age, you are thinking you know it all, you know, the teenage. Yeah. So then there's a man who comes in Mkushi, under local government, under Mkushi Council, and he announces that he's, you know, trying to put a drama group together. And these people will be responsible for, you know, like sensitizations around the district for different health matters, like,
okay,
you know, HIV and AIDS,
right,
you know, TB, malaria, you know, water and sanitation. And so I joined the group, you know. So a few of my friends, we come together, we go to him, and he says, okay, I'll start training you. Then fast forward, like just a few months later, after that, we get sponsored by African Development Bank.
Yes.
To come to Lusaka for a proper training now as thespians. So we did that training for about a month. And we were staying at, where was I staying? Just, there's a lodge just down the road near Chinama. What's this? Mumana.
Okay.
Yeah, it used to be a lodge.
Yes.
Now
yes.
I can see there's some hostels there and some offices, but it used to be called Mumana Pleasure Resort.
Yes.
So I was staying there for like a month. And we were doing our trainings from Mulungushi. Conference center.
With a view to train and go back.
Yes. So there was like 15 groups from around Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they trained us and they took us back to Mkoshi. And now we started getting, you know, sent to do field work, popular theater, sensitization. You know, we started with malaria. I think the first one was malaria. Then we did measles campaign. And then we did HIV and AIDS. And then we did TB. And then water and sanitation was like a big project because they were sinking boreholes. So the African Development Bank sponsored Zambia to sink boreholes around Zambia.
Right, yeah.
And Mkoshi alone had over 470 something, I've forgotten, 475, somewhere there, boreholes that they were sinking. So we had to go on the marked points, sensitize people about this wonderful thing that's coming to them and how they should help the team that's coming to sink.
Right.
And then after they sunk the boreholes, we went back again to teach them how to handle and treat, you know, and, you know, take care of the boreholes. And after like a few months, we went back to teach them on how to maintain the boreholes, you know.
So this was over a period of a year?
Yes, like 2 years actually.
2 years, yeah.
It was a big project.
Okay. And at this point, you're not...
That's when I discover I'm an artist because I became like the lead singer of the group. And like one of the dancers, there was two dancers and five drum beaters.
And also having to sing in different languages.
Yes.
Right?
Lala, Swaka, because Mkoshi is a Lala. Yeah. So Lala, Swaka. And we had a few songs that we learned from here when we came for training, which were in Chewa, Nsenga, you know, and some, you know, Northwestern province songs. You know, we had to diversify because... you don't know where you are going to be sent. Even the people that were training us, they told us you're not being trained for Mkoshi alone.
So you learned the different, to sing in the different languages.
So some of these projects, some places, maybe districts will get overwhelmed. They'll borrow a group to take them there to help. So we had to learn a lot of languages.
So the passion's now coming out.
Coming out, yes.
You're traveling around the country.
Yes.
You're feeling it.
It's all good and it's, you know, we are enjoying it. And
I'm thinking, what am I going to do after this? Are you thinking that?
Like, no, not really. You know, when you're young, when you're given a sweet.
Enjoying the moment.
Yeah, enjoying the sweet. Yeah, you're not asking yourself when it finishes, what next?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we are just enjoying. And then during that period, a friend of mine starts teaching me how to play an acoustic guitar. So we go in the field when we are not acting. We'd be doing those points from Monday to about Friday, then Saturday, Sunday, we rest at our camp. So Saturday, Sunday is teaching me how to play guitar. He is not even, you know, wanting to do anything with music. He just knows how to play guitar because he plays at church. So he's teaching me how to play guitar and I start writing songs, like developing my own songs.
And when you're
from the small few chords that he's teaching me, I develop my own chords, my own songs.
Well, a lot of the songs, because I know you come from a fairly Christian background.
Yes.
Were they Christian related or you're just...
I was just writing music. That was before I was born again.
Right.
So I was just writing music. And then 2006, I met Chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chameleon encouraged me to come to Lusaka.
Did you meet him on these...
Yeah, he came to Mkoshi to perform.
Right.
So then, you know... musicians always come up with stuff when they are performing. So he says, if anyone comes up on stage and sings one of my songs, word to word, I'll give you a CD. So my friends knew that I used to sing his songs. They pushed me onto the stage. I had never performed with a live band. It was my first time seeing a live band. You know, so I jump on stage and it works. And he says, I like you. I think you should come to Lusaka.
So at this point, you know you've got a good voice.
Yeah, I've discovered now there's a voice somewhere. I don't know yet if it's good, but there's a voice somewhere. So, and for him, for Chameleon, at that point, he was very big. He was like the Yo Maps.
Yes.
That time. You know, he was selling out domes. He was selling CDs, you know. And so I sing and he's like, come to Lusaka. So I came to Lusaka. He introduced me to Charlie. Charlie just passed on a few weeks ago. Rest in peace. So I went to Charlie and Charlie tells me, you are not ready to record your own music. But what he suggested was that I start working with Chameleon as one of his backup singers.
So what made him say you're not ready? What does someone see when they say that?
Yeah, so because for you to start recording, it takes a lot.
Yeah.
You need to be at a place where you can construct a song and it makes sense for the listener. So maybe I wasn't yet there. Also, my voice was still a bit shaky.
Okay.
Maybe I needed to work on my voice
more. Right, so by doing, the guidance was, if you work under someone
a
like
professional
that.
Professional artist, then you are going to improve. And maybe,
learn
and get ready for that. So, yeah, so that's how I joined Chameleon. I became his backup singer and we worked for over 2 years together.
Then it wasn't just Chameleon.
No.
Then it became?
It became Mampi. Yeah. I moved to Christo Sean. Mm. Also, rest in peace, Christo Sean. I moved to Hamoba. Mm-hmm. I worked with Taito. I worked with Ozzy. Yeah, I just became an industry backup singer, you know.
So you could shift from one to the other, basically.
Yeah, depending. Because I mean, you know, our industry doesn't really have money.
Yeah.
Now it's even better. Back then, you never got paid as a backup singer. Mm. So whoever can give you a platform, you just get excited to, you know, share stage with them. So I traveled a lot around Zambia with these artists, you know. I remember this one time I was coming from Mumbwa with Chameleon. And on our way, driving to Lusaka, I get a call from Taito. And he says, tomorrow morning we are going to Nakonde. You know, I just went home to change, pack my bags, and I went to his house in Roma. And 04, we drove to Nakonde. So it was like that, you know.
And then did the traveling around really start building your passion for Zambia and for the food, I know, which we're going to
come to. Yes, exactly.
Did it start building it, like, just because the passion comes through in your in your music, obviously, and then you are trying to, you know, preserve our music, which you're doing really well at.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that when I was working with these guys, I wasn't even thinking of doing
because they were also singing.
What I do. Yeah, they were doing a different type of music.
Exactly.
So, you know, when you're a backup singer for an artist, you are trying to sound like them. You are trying to learn who they are, you know.
So it's their
even
style.
Even on your mind, you're thinking, when I start doing my own thing, I should be like Chameleon, I should be like Taito, you know. But then I got bored at some point, and I decided to quit music. That was 2008.
Why? Was it too commercial? Was it just the moving around? Was it?
Yeah, I think I didn't really find my satisfaction.
Right.
Yeah. So nothing wrong with the music or the traveling around. I think just that personal conviction wasn't there. So I quit and I went back to Mukush.
Like, my time's done on this.
Yeah, like, let me do something else. I didn't even know what I wanted to do. So I went back to Mukushi. And my friends, the same guys, you know, by the way, I really appreciate those boys. They put money together and sent me back here just within a few months. They're like, no, you can't come and stay here. Go back, you know. Because in Mukushi, obviously, that time, 2008, there's no studio anywhere, you know. The only thing you can think about is when it gets dark, we go and drink alcohol with my friends, you know.
And what was your family saying at this point?
They wanted me to do something else. So there's a family farm in Mukushi where my grandfather, the first farm that he bought when we came back from Zimbabwe. So that time, 2008, everyone had left the farm and there was no one. So that farm, I remember it was abandoned for like 3 years until we got a notice from the chief, because it was still chief's land. saying you need to do something at this farm, otherwise or we repossess it.
We take it back, yeah.
Yeah. So that's when we started some activities. So that notice came around that time.
Mm.
And everyone, my family started saying, no, you have to go. You have to go and take care of that
farm. But you weren't the oldest.
No, I'm not.
But why you?
Because I was the only one who looked like I didn't have anything tangible that I was doing, you know. So they wanted me to go and stay at that farm.
Okay.
And at
but
this point, I'm
come
thinking,
along with him.
Yeah, and then my friends say, no.
Go back.
Go back to Lusaka. We believe there's something in there. You need to find it. So when I come back now, I'm staying in Villa at a studio called Unique Records for just 3 days. Within the 3 days, I discover an artist called Mumbayachi. I watch him on TV. I watch his video. I'm like, wow, why does this music sound so nice? You know? And I remember that day I even got goosebumps, and I'm like, I need to find this guy. I started looking for him. Unfortunately, I couldn't find him in the first year of me looking for him, even the second year. But he gave me confidence because now I felt my heart settle. Like, maybe this is the music I'm supposed to do. So I pick up my guitar now. I start writing songs in that direction. And it all starts making sense now.
Mm.
And I met a guy called Lukundo Siwale. He's now Chef's manager, Chef 187's manager. So that guy tells me, I'm opening a studio and I want you to come and, you know, be one of the producers at the studio. There's Grant Mtema and a few other guys, Critic, K-Star, 5-4. These are rappers. They are not producers. They are just rappers. So I say, okay. So I join him in Olympia Extension. So I start living with him and the studio is at home. So that's when I get exposed to all these other guys now, you know, Tuan, Sauma, Mampi comes back.
But you're still thinking.
Yeah, here now I know I have, there's a type of music now I want to, to push. That was 2010. 2011, I learned music production and I become the head producer.
2011 was just now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I become the head producer. But I still don't know if I want to record my own music. So, but then I'm sharpening my songwriting skills. So there's a girl that comes. She's at UNSA studying law. And she tells me, I sing. Do you want to try and record me? I was like, okay, let's record something. Then she sings a Bob Marley song. And I'm thinking, wow, she's got a nice voice. So we decide, okay, what are we going to call you? Let's start recording. So we started recording. We recorded about 4 or 5 songs. Then we are like, we need to put out these songs. But how do we put them out? Like, as who? You know? And then we decide, okay, Scarlett, because she loves red. So I don't know if you know an artist called Scarlett.
Yes.
That's how she's born. So we work on an album, and 2011, the album drops. And she starts making rounds, doing corporate events, Stanbic. You know, she's all over Lusaka.
She's all over at this point.
Yes, and I'm her backup guitarist now and backup singer.
So the
and producer.
So okay, this this world is very movious.
Exactly.
So from what I'm picking up, so at this point now the studio productions like being I'm not there anymore, but I'm now moving.
Yeah, but I'm a producer. So I'm a producer after hours. I'm a guitarist and you know backup singer. But still, you know, maintaining production and songwriting because she's not the only one I'm writing for at this point. There's Sauma, there's the 2-1 guys, you know, there's 5-4. A lot of artists come through and, you know.
So even when writing for them, is it more, who gives the direction? Like, is through yourself, like, look, I hear your voice and this is what you need to move with? Or are some of them coming to you and saying, look, I kind of feel this vibe. Can you write for me? Or combination,
so
obviously.
It's a bit of both. Mm. You know, sometimes an artist comes with a direction already, like how I go, because now I'm just an artist. So if I go to a producer, I already know how the music is supposed to sound, the direction of the song, the arrangement, everything, even how the band is supposed to play. I already know. But I want their mind to you know, sort
craft
of like,
it.
Yes, to craft it. Because I believe that when there's more than one mind on a project, it makes sense for a lot of people. So, yeah.
So we're now here. It's buzzing. We're moving around.
Yes.
I'm feeling it.
Yes, yes.
I'm writing. I'm in my element.
Yeah.
Then when do you say, okay, I need to make this move?
That whole thing goes on for like 2 years and somehow it falls crumbling, like falls apart, you know? There's a few differences in-house and, you know, people leave, yeah. People grow. And I'm thinking, what's next for me? So I pick up the songs that I used to write for myself because there's also some other songs that I wrote and gave out to people and they couldn't execute them. And I'm like, maybe this song is mine. And I start compiling them. Now I'm thinking, if I have to record music, it has to be, you know, at an improved level, not at the level where I work, you know. So I need to look for a bigger studio, for a more experienced producer. I need to look for a band because I want to record live. So now I picked up my love for live recorded music from my grandfather. Oliver Mtukudzi, yeah. Piquet Chala, all these guys.
That was clear. Money. That was clear.
That one was clear. It never left my heart. So I was like, I need to record like that. How can we do it now?
But were you also thinking, other than that you're feeling it, were you also thinking, I need to do something unique?
Yes.
Which is the first
direction. I've always wanted to be a unique person. Even when I was a songwriter and producer, I always wanted to be unique and different for some reason. So from the early stage of me being in the music business, I've always had one say, you know. They always say, let's think outside the box. But I always say, let's forget the box. Let's not even have the box in the picture. Because the truth is, if you're outside the box, you're still around the box.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that you're talking about the box.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's forget the box. So for me, I don't look at trends or what's happening, what's buzzing out there. I get my sound from the heart.
So even in terms of character, because to me, you're coming across as a very motivated yet calm individual.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also read somewhere that you weren't always this calm, like you got a bit of a, you used to have a bit of a short temper.
Where do you find that information? Wow. Okay. Yeah, I did. I did. When I was still in school, I used to have a short temper. Mm. I had a very bad short temper. And I don't know if there's a good short temper and a bad short temper, but I mean, it was bad.
Maybe it's the length of the short
temper.
Yes,
exactly.
Does it last or does it stop?
Yeah, yeah. So I was one of those people that if I have a problem with you, even after a month when we meet, it's on sight.
Oh, no.
You know, so my uncle encouraged me to start training martial arts.
Yes.
And that really helped a lot. So I went on to become, to actually be in the national team, Central Province Division. And that's where I got injured. And that's another story.
We'll, you know, also what get
I
mean?
Yeah.
But I was wondering if what the music, when you've reached this point now,
yeah,
where you know you, it's in you, it's you. You found your direction, you found your you.
Yeah.
What does it do for you in terms of just the satisfaction, just the, what does it do to your heart other than warm it? What does it, how does it make you feel?
It makes me feel alive.
Mm.
It makes me feel alive. The few times that you've seen me perform, or the only time you saw me perform, maybe you saw the life that my face was, amazing, you know, projecting.
Yeah.
When I'm there, I don't want anything else
other
than what I'm doing. So for me, I believe that I'm not the best, you know, but even my team believes in me because of what they see when I'm doing it.
Did it worry you at any point that, because you, like you say, you don't really worry about what's out there. So I suppose, let me turn this around.
Yeah.
You're not really worried about the fact that you're singing in Bemba, in all our local languages.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
No, that's the thing. That's who I am.
That's who I am. Yeah. There's out here, people will tell you, no, if you want to go international, you have to sing in English. I mean, last year I was in Japan, you know, not singing to a Zambian community, you know. I believe music is a language. A lot of people say this. Music is a language of its own. So it finds a way to communicate to people and to the right people.
Because actually, even if someone doesn't understand what you're saying, they can feel
what
you're saying.
They can feel it. And so last year when we went to Japan, I don't mean to rush you, obviously.
No.
last year when we went to Japan, we were taken there by the Ministry of Commerce to perform at an event, an expo, a world expo. So after our performance, we got a music promoter from France requesting for our quotation to tour us. So it's beyond what you can understand when I sing it out, you know?
Yeah. Well, we saw that the other day.
It's more about the feeling. Yeah.
You had international visitors singing all around you and dancing
exactly.
all around you.
Yeah, exactly. So music is like that. It's powerful in its own right. So I hate it when people limit it and say, no, you have to sing in English. But no, I mean, unless you don't believe in yourself, you know? For me, I've been to events where everyone is performing with a full band. And I'm thinking, I was hired to just do acoustic. And I call my manager, I fume at him. I'm like, why did you accept this? You know, everyone is... So I'll look weak. And then I tell myself, James, this is you. Go on and do your thing. And everyone who's doing the full band, people are just sitting and watching. And I go on with just a guitar and people are dancing.
Yeah, they are.
So you see, music is very powerful that it has a way of penetrating your heart despite what you're going through.
What's your relationship with your guitar?
Well, it's an instrument. I use it to make money. But I hear a lot of people say, no, this is my wife. No, it's just an instrument. It's an instrument, but I respect that instrument because it completes me. Yeah. Without the guitar, James can't really show you the artistry that he can show you when he's with the guitar. Mm. So I've been to events where they want me to mime. I refuse. I turn down bookings, you know, because for me, I believe me and my guitar are a team. You know, if you want to see what I can do as James Sakala, allow me to come with my guitar.
So tell me some of the things that you, because we've talked about a number of artists you've worked with.
Yeah.
Tell me some of the things that you've, or what something that stands out from having worked with a particular artist that you still take with you today. Like, I learned that from him.
From her.
Okay. Being on stage.
Yeah. So I worked with someone that mentored me for about 2 years before he passed on. Actually 6 years before he passed on, Oliver Mtukudzi. I learned to respect studio sessions, you know, because that's where you create your career from the studio. Anywhere else, it's just now time falling in place. But in studio, that's where your career is created. So if you don't respect your studio moments, you have a not so much organized, you know, life as an artist, you know. So I learned that. And also, there's one thing that he taught me. He taught me you can't own people. Allow people to grow when they need to grow. So in my team, my management and my band, they also know that if anything happened, for example, we are traveling to Livingstone today, I told you after this, and it just happens that two of my band members are busy with another artist.
Which you used to be as well.
Yeah, exactly.
At one point.
Yes. So I will not, you know, get angry at them like, no, but you know, we have a booking. No. Okay, do your thing.
I'll
make
grow.
A plan. Yes, they have to grow.
Yeah.
People have to grow beyond you.
Yeah.
People have to grow beyond your reach or your sight reach. The problem with Zambians is that they wish you growth, but not beyond where they can see you. They still need to see you around, you know. So for me, I allow my boys to go. When they need to travel out, I allow them. There's no problem. Even one day when someone comes and says, I think what you're paying me is not enough, someone has offered me more money, I'll bless them.
Mm.
I'll be like, okay, cool. I'll be consulting whenever I can.
But I'm sure some of them come back and you still...
It's a small world. It's actually a very small industry. So we use one on the same artists and musicians and session, you know, musicians. So that's why for me, I've always said, it's not necessary to fight in this industry, to have beef, you know, that American culture for beef. You know, this one is going back and forth with this one on social media. It's not necessary. Because at the end of the day, you meet at the same bookings, you know, at the same kitchen parties, at the same weddings,
yeah,
same vilangamuliro. Imagine if I had beef with the Bobbyist. Was I going to manage to call him on stage? No,
of course
you can't. You need to be friendly and respect people.
Yeah.
If you want to be respected, also, you have to know that you have to respect people.
So tell me about one particular incident, maybe, or something that once, because your performance, obviously, we don't know about the sessions in the studio, which you say are so compelling and are so key to making an artist.
Exactly.
So we just see the performer on stage. But there must have been a time where you say something happened to me on stage where people saw and it either shut me down or it grew me. Maybe it was in the early years.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything you can look back on?
Yeah, so this one time, I don't know what was happening. So I had a big booking and I get on stage and I forget my lyrics for one of the songs. And I could tell that people saw it, you know, because obviously some people even like booed me, you know, so it was a learning experience. But I like that I was trained as an entertainer by those people who were training me in the drama group. So most of the techniques they showed me for drama, I use them in the music.
Mm.
So everything that has happened in my life
was
actually preparing me for this that I am today. So my comeback was very smooth. And at the end of the day, when I left stage, people were getting my number, taking pictures with me, like, oh, we've never seen a performer like you. Yeah.
Little did they know.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. But on your mind, the back of your mind, you know that, ish, that one was crazy. It was crazy. Yeah. So these things happen a lot.
Yeah, of course they do. But we don't.
Yeah, people don't see it.
But because you've got all the trainings that you've talked about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you know how to cover up. When this happens, you know how to cover up. You have to be sharp. You have to be quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you show people, they will drain the bit of energy that you remained with and you will now fail to do the rest of the set.
So that must be the same for when you see any negativity on social media. I mean, do you even respond to those? Do you even pay much attention?
I don't. I'm actually one of those artists who are, I don't know if I should say blessed or lucky, that I don't really get a lot of social media backlash.
Mm.
Because I'm drama free. But I know they're still looking, you know. One day, who knew that one day we'll have this big drama that just happened over the weekend, you know. So they keep looking. People keep looking. They never rest, you know, especially if they don't know anything about you. Just know they will pick up even just the smallest bit of something and just amplify it. So I never get that much backlash. I remember this one time I was doing a project for one of these TV, I'm trying to avoid mentioning media just for the respect of this media house. So I was doing that project for them. It was a Christmas performance. So artists were, you know, doing like a performance and they were shooting and they were supposed to show them on TV. So when they announced about my shoot, the day for my shoot, because they were announcing to the public, hoping to get a few people come and be an audience.
Right.
There's someone that wrote there and said, these celebrity wannabes, what is he also trying to do? We don't even know who he is. You know, I saw a lot of people mention me, like my friends, they were mentioning me on that comment. And I just went and dropped a love. That's all.
Managing them.
I don't have any reason to prove or explain myself to you. If you think I'm not a good artist, it's up to you.
Go and listen to someone.
Even
else.
Last year, I did an event where we brought Fally Ipupa and I was performing. And after the whole event, the following day, you know how people write reviews? No, it was cold, but the event was good. No, I didn't like how, what. Someone said, James Akala is forcing things. He's not a musician. What should I do?
What do you want me to do about
what?
That?
Exactly.
That's what you think.
You know, and he had the audacity to actually mention me, you know. So he wanted me to see
and
the comment.
React. So even whilst I want to just wrap up on the industry a little bit more and then ask you, like, what makes you so proud of our Zambian music arena? What now is making you very proud?
Okay. So first of all, I'm a cultured human being. I grew up you know, in my grandfather's home. So he made sure that he trained me well, you know, trained me how to respect people, how to you know, stay away from people's businesses. That's still respecting, right?
Exactly.
Also, he taught me a lot about our traditional things like food, you know, farming, obviously, the traditional side of farming as well. He taught me how to poach, which is a very bad thing. But, you know, I had to know, because if I have to stand against it now, I need to understand what I'm talking about.
Mm.
So I like that he taught me how to do that. So that now, you know, I have tried to apply it in my music, and also a few other people that are applying it in their music. It's easy for me to advocate for our sound, you know. I am not really happy that obviously there's people that make music just anyhow they wish, you know. Sometimes they insult in these songs. Mm. Sometimes they, you know, they write lines that are somehow suggesting certain behaviors. But you can't control people, you know. That's not, I don't think it's my duty to start controlling people. I will be killed, you know. People take these things personally. Mm. So, yeah, but basically, I appreciate the fact that now Zambians are waking up and they know which one is good music and which one is not. And, you know, I'm happy that the corporate world is also, you know, waking up.
Mm.
They've now started learning intentionally on how to put value on our artists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a really good point, because I think, like you said, years ago, you'd perform for nothing.
People will hire you and just give you food and drinks.
But yeah, I think our Zambian arena has now, music arena has really gained respect. And also with artists like you who are going out there regionally, internationally, we're really gaining a fantastic, well, our name is growing. Also the quality, like you say.
Yeah.
The quality of music.
So, and you know, there's a few promoters that, you know, have been sacrificing, you know, their funds, their time, their energy to bring international artists, you know. And the reason, for me, I like that. I love that, because whether those guys who are coming here are finished or not, the fact is we are getting exposure. We're getting exposed. We are learning. We are seeing different types of contracts.
Mm.
We don't have music schools here. We don't have what you call music law in Zambia. You know, most of our lawyers, I don't think there's any lawyer actually. Maybe there is that have studied music law. I don't know if we have any lawyers that have studied music law.
I doubt it.
Yeah, but exactly.
That's really interesting.
So we don't have contracts. Like, we don't. Most of our managers are self-taught.
Mm.
They just read. Mm. Yeah, we teach each other as we go. Experiences teach us. So when we get those international artists come here,
you learn from
them. We learn from them. We have workshops. Like, for example, Jaru is coming in a few weeks. And we managed to, I'm saying we because I'm part of the organizing team. We managed to convince his management to do a 2-hour workshop with our managers, local managers. You know, this is someone who's coming from America.
That's awesome.
So they'll teach our managers how to handle an artist, how to handle contracts, and how to handle clients, you know, in that 2 hours.
That's awesome.
It'll be too much.
Yeah.
But at least our managers will pick one or two things, you know, meaning they are not the same after that, you know. A few years ago, there's an artist who came here. His name is Richard Bonner. I had an opportunity to perform alongside him. And that guy is signed under Quincy Jones's record label.
Wow.
I mean, Quincy Jones is gone now, like 2 years ago, I think.
About
2 years ago. But, I mean, he was signed before that time. So this is someone who is signed under a label where Michael Jackson was signed. And when he came here, he was okay to do a workshop with local artists under Alliance Francaise. And the sad thing is that no artists showed up. I mean, there were a few. Me, myself, I was there. Mumbayachi was there. Wezi, Salma was there. Maureen Lilanda and Moses Sakala and Angela Nyirenda. But these so-called big artists that we have, no one showed up.
Well, I think you're already naming, you know, the yeah. names you're already naming have got a strong history of...
Yes. But then it shouldn't be a certain type of artist, you know, taking these things serious. It should be the Zambian music industry, because we, as a whole, it needs to learn the industry so that we position ourselves at a certain level worldwide. You know, we can't start talking about winning Grammys or attempting for Grammy nominations if we are not taking some of these things seriously.
I hear you.
The team that sits, the Academy team that sit under the Grammy
yes.
Academy, they look at a lot of things when you push in your song. Mm. You know, they look at sound quality, they look at artist quality, they look at how your management is set up. They look at a lot of things before they can nominate you.
Mm.
So year in, year out, we'll be pushing those, trying, attempting nominations, and it will not happen. And I'm sorry, I'll say this, you know, it will not happen. A Grammy will never come to Zambia until our attitude changes, us here as Zambians.
So if you had an option,
mm.
maybe you should have, if you were not James Sakala, maybe you should have been the lawyer, the music lawyer for James Sakala.
Maybe, or, I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Maybe.
What else would you have been doing if you weren't doing this? When you look
definitely.
At everything you've learned,
mm.
what if today, you know, you had to switch career, what would it be?
A farmer.
There you go. That's yeah. No,
forget music. I would just go back to the farms, because I love farm life. I love, even now that I'm doing music, trust me, I know that I love farm life, because I don't like living in areas where there's a lot of noise.
Mm. Like
my wife and I bought a property recently down Mumba Road, you know, so it's like a 7-acre farm. So I told her that this is where we are building our house, so we're moving here. I want to be surrounded by birds, you know, birds at home, animals.
Because farm life goes with peace.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The
maybe I'll have a studio there. My studio, not a public studio.
That would be great.
The
act in itself of farming is very therapeutic.
Exactly.
And I think obviously the environment is as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now that you've mentioned your wife, you got married around the age of 40.
Yeah.
Most people would say, so late.
Yeah.
Weren't they asking you what's going on in the family?
I married at 41.
Weren't they asking what's going on? Or were you just busy?
I got a few questions from people like that, you know,
yes.
family, you know, asking me what's happening. My mother telling me, no, because I'm a last born. So my mother was always making noise. Before I die,
yeah.
I want to hold my grandchild. I'm like, how many do you have? You know, you still want another one.
So you got away with it because everybody else was getting married now.
Yeah. So I mean, so for me, maybe at some point I wanted to get married. Then there's issues of obviously breaking up and disappointments and, you know, depression and whatever. But also I've come to believe that God times everyone's life. So he knows when he wants you to take a certain step in your life. So one thing I even tell a lot of my other friends who are not married is to just be patient. Don't rush for these things, because, hey, marriage is not, it's not child's play.
No, it's not child's play. And you know what? And it's not for everybody. And
no.
Like you say,
yeah.
It has a timing, like everything else in life.
Yeah.
Look at your career. It had its own timings. And now you've seen the reasons why certain things happened.
Yeah.
And it probably has the same.
Yeah. You need to have a lot of maturity for you to get. I'm not saying I've got experience now, but at least the 2 years that I've been in marriage, I've seen that deciding to marry now was a good thing for me, because there's a lot of things I would have not tolerated 10 years ago, you know. But now I'm like, oh, this is my person, you know. God has given me this person. So regardless, let me appreciate her. Let me love her. Let me do my part.
And what is her name?
Her name is Agnes.
Okay.
And Sanjay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how does she, how does she manage with your career, being on the road quite a lot, what comes with it? She doesn't come from the creative world, does she?
No, so she doesn't actually. Her father was a lecturer at UNSA for the longest time. Then he became a farmer, like a big farmer. She has always been in the corporate world.
Maybe that works. Maybe that
dating and marrying a creative person was like the first time with me, like ever in her life. So she had to learn a lot of things. She had to adjust a lot. She had to tolerate. She has to tolerate because it's ongoing. You know what I mean? She has to tolerate a lot, you know. Sometimes we make a program. We say, okay, this is Sunday. So this Sunday we're just home, family time, what. And then my manager will call and say, we have a booking at 12 hours today on Sunday. She has to adjust.
But you also have to adjust.
Yes, and definitely. Yeah. You know, but sometimes I'll sit her down and I'm like, oh, look, there's this booking that has come.
Yeah.
Do you think we should take it or not? And she'll be like, go and work. You know, sometimes I don't even have to ask. I have to keep quiet. Tell my manager, please cancel that booking. We can't.
There's an eye here. Telling me it's staying right here.
Yeah. So it's like that. You know, sometimes I go to the studio and I come back at 01 because I am fired. I need to make something, create something until I'm satisfied. Sometimes when I was, you know, mixing and mastering my project, my producer would always have time for mixing in the night. So we're starting our sessions at 19 and finish at 04 and then go home, sleep up to around 15, wake up, you know, it's family time, 19, I go back to the studio. So any other person who's not prepared for that would think you're just sleeping at another woman's house.
Right.
There's no studio anywhere. Yeah. You're just lying. You know what I mean? So, but I'm grateful for my wife because these are some of the things that I don't really have to over-explain, you know? As long as I respect her, I tell her beforehand, this is what's going on.
Can tell her.
Yes. That's all.
Yeah.
You know? So, but then such things don't happen at a certain age. You know, someone will not easily understand you when they are 22.
No. Definitely not.
Because they are telling themselves, look, I'm still attractive. You are taking me for granted. You know how many men are lining up outside there? You know what I mean?
The competition is on.
You know? And it's not that my wife is not attractive anymore. She's very much attractive. But, you know, at that age, she's telling herself, let me take care of what I have. You know what I mean? Because I can go, everyone who's lying to me, at the end of the day, they are just lying. You know, some people just, it's curiosity. They're just curious. They just want to see and disappear. So you can't date everyone out here, you know. And that mindset only happens at a certain age. Yeah, so.
What should your children be saying about you, future children, current children? What should they be saying about you as a dad?
That my dad is hardworking. My dad is loving. My dad really loved our mother, especially when I'm gone. You know, they should say that, you know, even when I'm still around, obviously, when I'm still alive, wherever they go, they should carry. But also they should say my dad is strict because I grew up in such a home and I think it really helped me. This is why I respect people.
Was it strict because of just values or was it strict because the Christianity part was so strong? Sometimes I find that... The Christian or the religious side of a family is, because they're so, so religious, the children grow up in the home is very strict. Or was it just independent of that? Either way, it was.
So for me, I always believe that values are the ones that you instill in children. Not forget Christianity, forget everything else.
Like you said before, respect.
Train your child in the ways that you want to see them grow. That's what the Bible says, you know, spare a rod and spoil your child. So there's no, read about Jesus, I'll beat you. No. Train them well. So that when you introduce Jesus in their lives, they know that, okay, this is what our dad has been, you know, talking to us about. Even one day when they grow up and they don't want to be Christians, at least they should be respectable people in a society. That's what you teach your children. Yeah.
Nice. You talked earlier about, you said, I was born again. Right. Explain that to me.
So I got born again in 2012. Mm-hmm. So remember that period when I quit, I went to Mkushi. and I joined Bread of Life because I grew up in a Jehovah's Witness family. So I I left and I joined a Pentecostal church, Bread of Life, in Mukushi. So around that time, that same guy who was teaching me guitar is the one that took me to church. So, and I grew love for it, you know, and I wanted to pursue it further, and I got born again. So, yeah, and then from 2012, I only got baptized in 2016 under Mount Zion Christian Center.
Oh, yeah.
The one under Bishop Bruce MCD.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I've been a member since that time.
So how do you manage that with your lifestyle? How do you manage your religion with your lifestyle?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that there's a thin line between being a Christian who holds values and being a Christian who doesn't hold values.
Mm.
You know, it's easy to announce yourself to people, I'm a Christian, I'm born again, you know. But what you do behind closed doors is what actually qualifies you to be Christian. So, but then I've seen that the Christianity of nowadays is zoipachitani mulungazaweruz, you know, meaning you can do whatever you like as long as you remember that Jesus died for you and the blood washes you clean every day. So just call upon the blood. Even after sinning, you can call upon the blood. You know, I've seen that happening. So, yeah, but for me, I try by all means to. This is why I was saying it's very important for your children to learn values, like proper values, so that even when it's dark and they are alone, the values will slap them back into, you know, they'll be like, no, don't do that. Don't. Hey, stop, you know. Because it's very easy for me to travel to Namibia today and realize, oh, wow, look, I'm alone. You know, let's party,
yeah.
You know. It's very easy.
Yeah.
But even when you are in a hotel room in South Africa, you will just say, I'm done with work. Let me just maybe play my guitar, practice, or read the Bible, or read a book, and then sleep. Tomorrow I continue with my work, you know. Especially when you have money.
Yeah.
Ah.
Anything goes.
That's why they say you know the reality of a person when they have money. You know, people shouldn't tell you they are humble when they are broke. No, just tell them you are lying. Because give me just $1,000 today. Oh my God.
I'll show you.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very important like that. So for me, that's what matters. You know, what I do behind closed doors, what I do in the dark, what I do when I'm alone.
Yeah, I was going to ask that as well,
yeah.
Because it sounds like your alone time is, you respect your alone time.
Yes, yes.
Because probably you don't have a lot of it.
No. So and especially after marriage, you don't have a lot of alone time. Because I remember when I was still single, I would go out there, you know, do every other business with people, you know, do my music thing, visit a few friends. Sometimes we'll go out for drinks. And then 19 hours, my curfew starts, my own curfew. Then I get home, you know, and now I'm alone. I have to do things that I have to do when I'm alone.
Mm.
Like, you know, read a book or, you know, practice on my guitar for at least 3 hours, you know, try and write a song or study something, you know, online. But now when you get back home, you are a dad and a husband, you know. I've got a 5-month-old baby.
Nice.
Now. And now he knows me now. So when I just get home, he just gets excited. So he has to be in my hands.
What's his name?
Tapelo.
Okay.
So he has to be in my hands. So you see, there's no alone time there, you know?
But it's new time as well.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah, so.
This is better than being alone. To be
honest. Yes, exactly. So when I travel now, that's I'm away from to. Home. And I knock off from my work, from my day, whatever I'm doing during the day, now that's my alone time. And I have to use it properly, you know, to refuel my spirit, refuel my knowledge, you know, or add on to my knowledge, whatever I can practice, add on to the craft. Yeah.
So I know you hurt your back, but what do you do now replacing your martial arts?
I just train, like I don't do like the lethal physical training that I used to do, because the one who trained me in martial arts was a retired commando. So he used to train us for self-defense, mostly, not really as a sport. And it was a bit intense, you know, it was too intense. So now I try by all means to, you know, do some of those trainings, but toned down, you know, as long as I don't strain my back.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for mental and physical being, basically.
Yes, yes, yes. So I do programs like, if I see that I have got pressure over something, I will do a 2 weeks program for maybe press ups or running or sit ups or whatever. Yeah, if I feel like my body is becoming weak, I'll do maybe a 1 month program for something just like that. So I balance it like that.
So a lot of self-discipline right there.
Yeah,
right
by all means to be physically fit at any point in time. It's difficult. Sometimes you are busy for 2 months. You're just doing, running around, doing, helping people, doing what, family things, you know. Sometimes you forget about yourself, but it's very important that 5 minutes, every 5 minutes before you take your bath, do some training, you know. For me, I will spend it all on press-ups or sit-ups.
Nice.
Like that, because sit-ups deal with the whole body. Like it deals with the core of your body. So it's every part of your body, you know. So it helps you, you know, wake up.
Thank you for that. So even if you're in a hotel room anywhere, you do your
people like to say, no, I have to go to the gym, I have to, my subscription finished, so I can't train. No, you are just lying to yourself. The gym doesn't really help you. It just, you know, adds on the options that you have for training your body. But if you're serious with your training, you can train with this cup. Just a cup, you can train with it. I won't show you, but this is equipment enough.
I believe you.
You know, even the chair you're sitting on, that's equipment enough. Yeah. You know, you can train. So
I have learned a lot today. and I really, really hope you've enjoyed your conversation.
I have, definitely.
And it felt just like a conversation. I'm going to leave it there for now.
For now.
I think you'll be back.
Yeah, maybe we need to write a book or the whole magazine, the Nkwazi magazine, just my story. You know what I mean?
So. Do you hear that? So I'd like to thank you so, so much for your presence and your time, and really a passionate conversation that I've had. And I really, really hope you've enjoyed it.
I've really enjoyed it. And thank you so much. And one thing I have to mention to you, Nkwazi magazine was the first magazine to ever profile me, you know, ever. So I'm really grateful for them. I know that they've played a big role into my career.
Great.
Because I remember that time when they made that profile, that write-up, they put it on a plane. I don't know if they still do profile.
Yes, they do.
And Oliver Mtukudzi read about me first time on profile.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So when I physically met him, he told me that, oh, I first read about you on a magazine called Nkwazi on profile. I don't know where he was flying to. But he was on profile.
That's a great story. And I think he must have been, maybe he was flying at the time to Livingston, where you're going tomorrow.
Yes, yes. I think he had come here. Yeah. He flew into Lusaka and then he had a show in Livingston.
Yeah.
And they took him there. So, yeah.
That's a great way
to end. So I'm grateful to Nkwazi for always, always, always having me on this podcast and also just being interested in what's happening in my career.
No, it's great. Yeah. Your story is great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. And the story has come round in a round circle with James Sakala, who was first featured in Nkwazi magazine and has given us a fantastic interview. I'd really like to thank him. Thank you, the audience. And I really hope you enjoy the podcast.